Ayada. When? Kashyap. Of the devotee. Chitam. The mind. Arteshu. In the sense objects. Sameshu. Same. Indriya vrittibhihi. By the activities of the senses. Na. Not. Vigranati. Does perceive. Vaishamyam. Difference. Priyam. Agreeable. Apriyam. Not agreeable. Iti. Thus. Uta. Certainly. Translation. The exalted devotee's mind becomes equal poised in sensual activities, and he is transcendental to that which is agreeable and not agreeable. So you can repeat. The exalted devotee's mind becomes equal poised in sensual activities, and he is transcendental to that which is agreeable and not agreeable. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The significance of advancement in transcendental knowledge and detachment from material attraction is exhibited in the personality of a highly advanced devotee. For him, there is nothing agreeable or disagreeable because he does not act in any way for his personal sense gratification. Whatever he does, whatever he thinks, is for the satisfaction of the personality of Godhead. Either in the material world or in the spiritual world, his equipoised mind is completely manifested. He can understand that in the material world there is nothing good. Everything is bad due to its being contaminated by material nature. The materialist conclusions of good and bad, moral and immoral, etc., are simply mental concoction or sentiment. Actually, there is nothing good in the material world. In the spiritual field, everything is absolutely good. There is no inebriety in the spiritual varieties. Because a devotee accepts everything in spiritual vision, he is equipoised. That is the symptom of his being elevated to the transcendental position. He automatically attains detachment, vairagya, then jnana knowledge, and then actual transcendental knowledge. The conclusion is that an advanced devotee dovetails himself in the transcendental qualities of the Lord, and in that sense he becomes qualitatively one with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, yatasya chitam harteshu sameshvindriya vittivihi na vikrinati vaishamyam priyam apriyam ityuta. So, Om Gana Timirandasya Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, this is one of the actual main themes of the Bhagavad Gita, that Brahma Bhuvana Loka Panavarti No Arjuna Mamu Pejit Kunti Apunar Janmana Vijate. From the highest planet to the lowest planet, all places of misery where repeated birth and death takes place, but one who attains to my abode never takes birth again in the material world. And then also Dukalayam Ashashvatam, the whole material world is temporary and miserable. So, very common point here, or as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, this material world is no place for a gentleman. Many, many statements like that. So, yes, everything here is bad, but on the other hand, I mean, from one particular angle or perspective, everything is bad. On the other hand, everything here is good. Just like another statement is Vishvam Sukhayate, Vishvam Purna Sukhayate, that the transcendentalist sees this whole Vishvam, just like Lord Chaitanya is called Vishvamba, so we have Vishvam, the universe. Purna is full of happiness. So how to reconcile these two particular points of view? We reconcile them by understanding that this material world actually has a purpose, and the purpose is to teach us that our real relationship is with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in that way, everything is functioning here perfectly, as we know from the Isopanishad, that all the emanations from the Supreme Personality of Godhead are perfect and complete, just like the Supreme Absolute Truth is perfect and complete, and there's no inebriety in any of the emanations. So what is actually miserable about the material world is our perspective or our viewpoint or our attempts to enjoy the material world. That's actually what makes it miserable. Otherwise, it's not a miserable place. It's just a place to reform people, just like Prabhupada gave the example that the prison house is a miserable place for the prisoners, but it's not a miserable place for, hopefully it's not, but anyway, for those who are actually in charge or someone visits. Just like many years ago, I used to do prison preaching programs. And I was very enthusiastic about doing prison preaching programs, and then I became unenthusiastic because the people, when I was preaching to the people, they were very enthusiastic in the prison. But then as soon as they got out of prison, you know, all hell broke loose, and they forgot about all their vows. So I sort of lost my interest in prison preaching because of that. I don't know if that was good for me to lose my interest in prison preaching, but, you know, somehow or other, if you see everybody that you preach to just pig out after they get out of prison, it sort of dissuades you from continuing. Anyway, we're still doing a little bit of prison preaching. So just like I would go into the prisons, and I did not experience the prison as a miserable place. I experienced it as an ecstatic place. Of course, American prisons are pretty ecstatic anyway, even from a prisoner's perspective, because especially the one here in Butner, FCI Butner, Federal Correctional Institute Butner, because you go in and there's like some exercise room. I mean, normally we have to pay, isn't it? When we become a member of a club.
We do pay for that.
You do pay for that, yeah. Like there's a Hillsborough sports complex or something like that, and you have to pay for it, and you have to pay for the swimming pool. But then the prisons, you don't have to pay for it. Yeah, actually, we pay for it. Yeah, we pay the taxes for it. But the prisoners, they don't have to pay any of that. You know, so they're in there, and they get to eat whatever they want to eat, and they go to university. They don't have to pay for the university. We pay for their university. Some of them even have email nowadays, internet access, high-speed internet access. So, but anyway, the way that prisons are supposed to be is supposed to be a place of punishment. But in any case, when I went in there, I didn't experience it as a miserable place because it was serving Krishna in there, you know, and the prison had a purpose, and I had a purpose, and I could go in and come out anytime I wanted because they would stamp my hand. Actually, when you go into the prison, they actually stamp your hand with this so that you can see it under an ultraviolet light. Sometimes the prisoners actually make up their own stamp and get out like that, or they change clothes and they get out. But you can't do that in the material world. You can't go to Maya and with your hand stamp and say, look, you know, I'm just visiting here. Because Maya Durga can understand the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee, or between devotee and a rascal. So that's the point. It depends on your perspective whether the material world is miserable. Otherwise, if the material world were absolutely miserable, then we would say that Krishna has made some big mistake. But it's the mistake is being made by us, not by Krishna, in terms of our attempts to enjoy. Because when you attempt to enjoy the material world separately from Krishna, then the material world, wherever you go, becomes a very miserable place. So the point is that one is supposed to become detached from the attempts to enjoy the material world. That's vairagya. And of course, that is what the meaning of the word vairagya is. Ragya means aragya, or raja means passion. So it's not that we're supposed to become negative. Vairagya doesn't mean to be antagonistic, negative, angry with the material world, but vairagya means simply to be free of passion, the attempts to enjoy. And the attempts to enjoy either the mode of goodness, passion, or ignorance, or the mixture of the three. And so, you know, if you attempt to enjoy the mode of ignorance, that's easy to understand why that's not enjoyment, because that's like intoxication, you know, gross illicit sex, ignorant activities. And mode of passion is just like acquiring wealth, is the attempts to enjoy. And the mode of goodness, the attempts to enjoy, are actually a little bit more difficult to understand as being illusion, because it involves things like going through the forest and the trees and the mountain breeze. Just like yesterday, I came here and we saw the nice snow. And I was thinking how enjoyable it is. So that's a mode of goodness type of enjoyment. Just like I was recently in India, because they didn't have snow where I was in India, but the air was definitely not clear. Very polluted in India, so I wasn't enjoying it. But here I come back and I think, wow, the air is clear, I can breathe. It's so nice. So I'm actually attempts to enjoy the mode of goodness. And of course, all those attempts, whether it's the mode of passion, ignorance, goodness, are all attempts to, let's say, negate the misery for some time. In other words, I was enjoying the fresh air in North Carolina because the air in India was not fresh. It was quite polluted. You understand? Because it was the juxtaposition of the misery with the relief of the misery that gave me the enjoyment in the mode of goodness. And all enjoyment is like that. Lord Chaitanya gave the example of the dunking stool. You know, where you dunk someone in the water and you keep them underwater for so long that they practically become asphyxiated or die. And then you take them up and they can breathe and they think this is enjoyment. So that's the same thing that happened with me. I went to India, I couldn't breathe, came back, was able to breathe, and think, wow, this is nectar. Even though, you know, there's like ice and snow everywhere else and everyone else is, all the rest of you are thinking this is misery because of the juxtaposition of the warm weather. You understand? Here you were experiencing a different juxtaposition. Here you were experiencing nice, warm weather, and the air was already clear here. And then all of a sudden it becomes cold. So therefore, everybody I talked to yesterday said, this is miserable. And I was saying, it was blissful because of my juxtaposition. See, that's really the point, because the relief that I was experiencing from my misery was different than the misery that you were experiencing, that you were all experiencing here. So different types of misery. Some types of miseries are a relief of other types of misery, so they become apparently pleasant. Does everyone understand that point? So it's apparently pleasant because it relieves one type of misery. But then after a while, I started to get cold, so I would become more miserable. So anyway, so you substitute one misery for another. I mean, just like Prabhupada gave the example in the material world of a certain type of laddu. Oh, no, chutney, I'm sorry. A chutney that it's, you know, so sweet you can't resist and so hot you can't eat it. So that's the material world. So let's take the example of, like, the typical example sannyasis give, like, of a man and woman. You know, a man is thinking, you know, I'm not complete. And a woman's thinking, I'm not complete. And they're experiencing the misery because of that sense of incompleteness. You know, they're looking for the soulmate. Even if I had arguments with devotees recently about soulmates, whether they actually exist, but anyway, you know, it's like, wow, it's really, ISKCON's really changed since I was joined the movement, you know. I joined the movement, there's much more emphasis on renunciation. Nowadays we get, people talking, you know, they're 80 years old and they're talking about finding their soulmates. I said, you know, you've already been through 5 soulmates in this lifetime, you know. You know, that's a New Age concept, actually. The New Age concept is, in the beginning of all time, we were actually 2 and we were divided. You ever hear this New Age concept before? That's actually where the devotee's concept of soulmate comes from, but even though they don't understand where it comes from. That in the beginning of all time, you know, after, I guess, the Garden of Eden, that we were divided, there, you know, we are 2 halves. You know, this is actually a perverted reflection of Radha and Krishna. You know, Radha and Krishna were 1 and they became 2 for their enjoyment. So, you see, actually all this New Age philosophy is just a perverted reflection. So, we were 1 with our soulmate and then we became 2, and now our whole sojourn in the material world after many, many births is to look for that soulmate. You know, really, wow. You know, men are looking for the woman's soulmate, women are looking for the men's soulmate, and sometimes women are looking for other women's soulmate. And, you know, I can't, nowadays I can't even figure out the whole soulmate thing. So, anyway, and then finally when you find that person. So people are thinking, I'm incomplete. That's the point. You know, a man is thinking, I'm incomplete. I really need, I want someone to love. I need someone to love. And like that song goes, the woman's thinking, you know, I need someone to cherish me. Cherish is the word. You know, like that song goes. So, and then, there's an attempt to alleviate that misery. So then they get together, and then there's other types of misery that are substituted for that one type of misery. You know, people, or people think, you know, I need to have it. You know, then they're married, and they think, I need to have a baby. You know, that, you know, there's this real urge to have a baby. And then the baby's up all night long, meow, meow. Oh, no, not meow, meow. But, you know, that's a cat. Sorry. Meow. Or that's it, whatever it is. I'm not so good with baby. And then all night long, you know, you can't sleep. You know, the poor lady has, you know, such big bags under her eyes that she could carry her luggage in after about 3 weeks. So, and then there's another type of misery. So you keep substituting one type of misery for another type of misery in your attempts to escape from the misery. And that's the amazing thing. And then, of course, nowadays they have so much modern technology. I was just reading in the airline magazine, you got to take this HGH, human growth hormone, so you remain young and vibrant, you know, until you're 2,000 years old or something, like a mummy. So, oh yeah, there was one devotee who was telling me the story that this health person, you know, he's really like, he was taking all these things so he would live for a very long time. He was in great shape. Everyone said he was 20 years younger physically than his actual age was. And then he was jogging, then he was hit by a car and then died. So anyway, so that's the material world. I mean, just that's it, you know. And you may not accept it, and you probably don't accept it at this point. But that's our philosophy. That all it is, you know, one type of misery gives us relief from another type of misery. And that's it. That's the whole thing of material enjoyment. So then the point is how to become detached, vairagya. Do we just like recite to each other all the time, this material world is miserable, oh, it's nasty, it's miserable, your body is pus, your body is stool, your wife's body is pus and stool, your children's body is pus and stool. And, you know, trying to enjoy the tongue is pus and stool. And we talk more about pus and stool. We're practically become doctors in the Krishna Consciousness Movement. We deal with it more than nurses and doctors. So, isn't it? I mean, how do you become detached from this thing? So we find people sometimes engage in very harsh austerities to become detached. Even in our movement, I've experienced these things, to become detached from the material world. But then Prabhupada said, when you engage in these harsh austerities, it makes your heart harder. And you become angry and harsh sometimes. Like I was talking to one devotee yesterday, 2 days ago, and they were telling me about another devotee who had really executed harsh austerities, but then, and they were saying, this devotee is so advanced, he's executing this austerity, executing that austerity. But then I was thinking, at the same time, I know something about that devotee, that he engages in so much criticism of other Vaishnavas. He was even kicked out of a particular zone for actually, you know, just spending his whole life criticizing this Vaishnava, giving even from the Bhagavatam class, he's criticizing the Vaishnava. So I was thinking, how to juxtapose these two things? You know, the person's really, you know, really austere, really engaged in chanting and hearing. And then I understood that if our attitude towards renunciation is actually a hatefulness, or hatefulness either towards ourselves or even towards our material needs, it results in unfulfillment of the needs, which Bhaktivedanta Thakur says are necessary to fulfill if we want what is going to be stable in Krishna consciousness, material needs and spiritual needs. And then If the needs are not fulfilled, that's evidenced sometimes by symptoms like anger. You know, anger is a symptom of needs unfulfilled, as we all know. And, you know, contemplating things, you know, strategies, etc. We're not going to get into the whole discussion of anger at this point, because Krishna gets into it in the Gita, about contemplating sense objects and then getting attached. So I was thinking that this is actually not the way to become detached. And actually, even in Buddhism, you find that Lord Buddha, I mean, if you go into the history of Buddhism, Lord Buddha was executing very severe austerities, and then he came to the point of the middle path, isn't it? And then he said, you know, this is not too heavy, not too much enjoyment, not too much, you know, abnegation of the senses, but just the middle path. And also we find the example with his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, that Srila Prabhupada showed us by his example, you know, being completely detached on the level of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. And Prabhupada could have certainly lived, you know, drinking a little buttermilk every 3 days. Just like I was in Vrindavan, and we were hearing about the Goswamis, that sometimes they would just take a little buttermilk. They call it chach. Isn't it? Chach. Isn't that Hindi? Chach. It means the buttermilk. You know, you go around. It's interesting. You go around Vrindavan, and there's roti and chach. If you do madhukari, and they cook the rotis. Roti means chapati, for those of you who don't know. They cook them very interesting over cow manure. Even when I was seeing that, I was thinking maybe I should contact our friends at Prabhupada Village and get them to ship me down some cow manure so I could cook and make little patties on the side of my house. You know, and dry them up like that. I was thinking that might be cool. Because the rotis taste much better there than they do here. So anyway, so basically the sages, that's all they eat. You know, they go madhukari and they get plenty of rotis and chach. They grind their own wheat. It's very nice. They grind their own wheat and they make chapatis. Most of the time, they don't make chapatis with a rolling pin. They actually flatten them with their hands. It's really nice. They go around the edges and everything. Like, somewhat like they used to do in a pizzeria, you know. They would do with chapatis with the hands. So anyway, so the sages, that's what they would eat. I mean, there certainly wasn't like, let's sit down and have a lot of sweet rice, halva, pakoras, laddus, and things like that. It was, you know, the chach and the rotis, actually little rotis, but they were real nice. They were cooked in cow manure. Maybe someone can contact the devotees when they bring down milk to bring down some cow manure for me. So Prabhupada was certainly, you know, on that level, but for us, he showed us the middle path. I mean, it's really interesting. You don't see Prabhupada. I mean, Prabhupada was, of course, waking up at like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning doing his work, but he wasn't showing the sort of austerities that would frighten us to death. Isn't it? You know, I was thinking, you know, I remember in the early days, yeah, I went to this one temple. I won't mention what temple it was. The temple president was executing the austerities, and I became frightened. You know, he was eating so little, and we were just, and maybe I'll give you a hint of what temple it is. He just fed the devotees oat water in the morning. You probably know what temple I'm talking about. And I saw the austerities, and I just, like, became frightened. I said, if this is what spiritual advancement means, I don't want to become spiritually advanced. So I actually became, it actually turned me off towards spiritual advancement, just seeing the external austerities. And later on, this person didn't do too well in devotional service. He had his challenges in devotional service. So I've actually seen, practically, when there's, like, extreme austerities, then after a while, the person sort of, like, deviates from those extreme austerities and practically goes to the opposite extreme. So we're meant to follow the middle path. But just by following the middle path doesn't make you renounced either. You know, that would be nice, you know, just by being moderate in your eating. So Krishna also says, mityahara viharasha in the Gita. He says one should be mitya. Mitya means like middle. One should be moderate in their eating and sleeping. Krishna says one who eats too much is not a yogi. One who eats too little is not a yogi. One sleeps too much, not sleeps too little is a yogi. So Krishna also advocates this middle path in the Gita. It's not that it just came from Buddhism. It came from Krishna. You know, Krishna advocates this. So, but still, just by following the middle path, one doesn't become detached. You know, one becomes situated in the mode of goodness, and then one may become more attached because one is attached to the sense of happiness that comes from the mode of goodness. Krishna says this in the Gita. In the mode of goodness, one becomes conditioned to a sense of happiness. You know, everything's all right. You know, I'm charitable. I'm helping all the poor people. I like my fresh air in North Carolina. Nice snow. Anyway. So detachment can never come from material adjustments. It's impossible. In fact, what comes from material adjustments is either material attachment or anger, one of the two. Like we see in the case of some sages like Vishwamitra Muni, who would be meditating, trying to become detached from the material world, and he would usually succumb to anger or to lust. You know, one of the two things. Like anger when some poor bird passed poop on his head. He pooped on his head, you know. You understand? Poop? Stool. That's a fancy word for stool. Yeah, the poor bird was up in the tree and went plop. I know. It was like I was, oh yeah. Yeah, I was talking to one of my godbrothers in Vrindavan. It's funny. And he was saying, you've got to be real careful in Vrindavan, because once I was in Vrindavan and I started to think about sense gratification, all of a sudden I felt some water on my head. And I said, what? What was happening? He said, well, a monkey passed urine on my head. Monkeys do that sometimes in Vrindavan. You know, they just... So from then on, you know, I always looked up in the trees before I sat down and remained in one place, because the monkeys actually do things like that. And so anyways, that's a message from Krishna. You better be Krishna conscious, you know. When you feel sprinkling on your head and it's a sunny day. So anyway, Vishwamitra Muni is meditating, and the bird just like did what birds do. The birds are not toilet trained. It's like one of my disciples has birds, and they let loose birds in their house. And he went, and I said, isn't there stool everywhere? I said, just in the living room. So they said, the bird knows to stay in the living room. And there's poop all over the couches. My mother would love that. So this bird pooped on the head of this sage, you know. It was all made to Muni, and then the Muni just got angry. You know, well, for all of his detachment from the material world, you know, he couldn't become detached from anger. And he just succumbed to anger and then burnt the poor little bird to ashes. And then he lost all the results of his austerities. You know, so much for the vairagya. Because ragya, you know, passion is evidenced by anger, which is actually wrath, which is mode of ignorance. Krishna talks about that in the Gita, you know, later transformed into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. So in other words, he wasn't becoming detached by negation, by austerities. You don't become detached by austerities. You just become negative. So the what we're supposed to attain is nirapeksha. Nirapeksha is the Sanskrit word meaning just like being neutral. And then, of course, neutrality is also mentioned many times in the Gita. You know, vidya vinaya sampane brahmani gavihashtani suni chayvas bhaktica pandita samadarshana samadarshi. That means equal vision. Equal vision. Also for qualities of a Brahman. First quality of a Brahman is what? Equality. Sama. Isn't it? Equal. Sama. Dhamma. Before you can actually become Dhamma or, you know, tame or sense controlled, then you have to become Sama. So you see, actually, even in the verse of the qualities of the Brahmana, that's the prerequisite for controlling the senses. Sama, being equal poised. So how does one become equal poised? I mean, that's the question, which is real renunciation, real vairagya. And that's easy. That's an easy answer to that one. That if you're absorbed, as Prabhupada says here in the purport, the advanced devotee dovetails himself in the transcendental qualities of the Lord. What that means is that you absorb your mind in the descriptions of the transcendental qualities, name, pastime, associates of the Supreme Person of Holy Dham. Now, one devotee was asking me, what's the benefit of going to the Holy Dham? Oh, no, actually, no, the example was, the devotee said, what's the benefit of circumambulating Govardhan Hill when I have a Govardhan Shila and I can just walk around it? It's a lot easier. I can do Dandabhai Parikrama every day, you know, that's cool. They said, is there more spiritual benefit to walking around the one Shila you have than the whole hill? And I said, in one sense, it's the same. But in another sense, it actually, when you walk around the whole hill, then your mind could be absorbed in all the different places of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I mean, it's the same Shakti as circumambulating one little Shila. You know, I have to make some adjustment or arrangement for my Shila so I can walk around every day. I guess I can walk around my whole house, the same thing. So, but as far as the mind, we have to make some arrangements so the mind is absorbed in the transcendental qualities, which what Prabhupada says, devotee dovetails himself in the transcendental qualities. So it has to, the real point about going to a holy place is to hear, in other words. That's the point I'm getting to. The real point isn't just to go there. That's described, if you just go there and just then take a bath, it's like a cow or an ass. Yatirtha buddhi shalade and akari chit janeshu abhigeshu saiva gokura. If you just go to a holy place and just like run around the hill, just like we were Govardhan, and people were just like going around the hill, but they didn't know what they were doing. Most of them didn't know what they were doing. Just like they do it as a ritual, which is nice. They get the benefit, sure. But the mind is really not absorbed. I mean, some people are going around the hill, boyfriend, girlfriend, holding hands too, which is all right. I don't know if it's all right. But anyway, still, they're getting benefit, but they're really, their consciousness, Savai Mana Krishna Padara Vindayo, is not being focused on Krishna. So the real point is transcendental sound. That's the real point. How do you absorb the mind? By hearing. Just like I was, in Vrindavan, we went to this one place called Seshayi Vishnu. You've heard about this? It's in the Prabhupada Lilamrita. That's where Prabhupada, at that particular point, that's where Prabhupada met his spiritual master and heard from his spiritual master. And there's that whole story of the Lilamrita where they announced to all the devotees, today we're going to see Seshayi Vishnu. And everybody go, and anybody wants to stay back, they can hear from Bhakti Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So Prabhupada was, and maybe one or two other people, were the only people who stayed back to associate with his guru. And everyone else went to see the deity. And Prabhupada said, he said something like, what am I going to see, you know, with the deity, when I can associate and hear from Krishna's pure devotee? So he stayed back, and that's when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur marked with Srila Prabhupada that he likes to hear. So that is the real point of Krishna consciousness, not simply to go to a holy place, but to absorb the mind by hearing. If you don't absorb the mind by hearing in a holy place, then what's the benefit? I mean, you get some benefit, but what's the benefit anyway? So when I saw this at Govardhan, the people were just going around, And I mean, it's wonderful, but they didn't really understand what they were doing. I just became convinced that we have to do something. ISKCON has to do something to give the people knowledge about what they're doing so that they become devotees. I mean, these are all potential devotees. And people going around Govardhan Hill, and that's probably one of our best candidates, some of our best candidates for Krishna consciousness. And there's no ISKCON temple there, which is actually not so good. I mean, we have our ISKCON, there's an ISKCON retreat center there, but there's no place for the general people to come and hear and about the philosophy coming down in our Sampradaya from Lord Brahma all the way down through Srila Prabhupada. So anyway, so that's one of the things I want to do in the future, is establish some sort of ISKCON Krishna conscious place there so people can understand what they're doing. And then really absorb the mind in Krishna. And when the mind is absorbed in Krishna, then raso vajram, raso pirsa, padam jasani vajra, then you get a higher taste. That's all. And then the material world is no longer, you know, attractive, and you're no longer repulsed by the material world. You're just neutral to the whole thing. It's not that, ooh, maya, ooh, stool, yuck, anymore. It's no more yuck. It's Krishna, like that. Like in Vrindavan, everyone is saying, Radhe, Radhe. You know, all around Braj, they're saying Radhe, Radhe. They're not saying yuck, yuck. I never met anyone saying yuck, yuck. And there's a lot of stool on the ground things to say yuck, yuck about. Anyway, just like when you go on pilgrimage, one of the main things, you better watch the ground. Because, anyway, you understand. Because there's all sorts of interesting things you might step on besides the thorns. So, but still, nobody's going yuck. They're absorbed in Radhe, Radhe. And that's how you greet everybody, Radhe, Radhe. So transcendental sound is the point. And if you absorb in transcendental sound, you can be anywhere, and where you are is Vrindavan. Mm-hmm. And if you're not absorbed in transcendental sound, even if you bring your body to a particular place, then wherever your mind is, that's where you are. Not where your body is. You understand? It's not. You are where your mind is, not where your body is. And if your mind is absorbed, you can be in Vrindavan and your mind being absorbed in Harry Potter or the Dark Lord or something. Then that's where the mind is absorbed. That's where you are. So anyway, so that's how we get detached. Hear as much about Krishna, Krishna's philosophy, Krishna's devotees, Krishna's anything related to Krishna spiritually. Of course, everything's related to Krishna. You don't want to hear about the material world. You know, you could say, I'm reading National Geographic. It's related to Krishna. Krishna says, aham sarvasya pravavo matak sarvam pravartite. You could take the philosophy out of context and say, Krishna says, everything comes from me. So National Geographic comes from Krishna. So I'm absorbed in Krishna. It's a different Krishna. You know, anyway. No, but you're absorbed in Krishna's external energy. This Krishna, we accept the Parinama. Parinama means that Krishna expands himself, and the material energy is an expansion of Krishna's spiritual energy. We don't accept the Vivartavad, we accept the Parinamavad, which is the transformation of energy. So we should absorb in Krishna's spiritual energy, things related with Krishna. In other words, just like Alambana and Udipana. Those are the two aspects of Vibhava. So Alambana means Krishna directly, Udipana means the things that remind one are related to Krishna. So that's what we should be absorbed in, these two aspects. And then whatever we're doing in the material world, even if our body is giving us misery, then we'll be neutral. Or if our body is giving us pleasure, we'll be neutral to that pleasure. And we won't be seeking to solve the material problem, you know, devoting our whole lives to solving material problems with another misery. Let me accept this misery so I can solve this misery. Wow. Okay, any questions or comments? We got about 1 minute. Questions, comments, arguments, problems, issues? Mental breakdowns? No? Okay. Krishna answered that one. All glories is Vaigraya, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.